The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, thank you. So, last week I addressed the topic of golf. This week, could have done badminton, dressage, equitation, but I'm pivoting to mortality. The only logical follow-up to a talk on golf. So William James described death as the worm at the core of the human condition. And the worm at the core that turns us into melancholy metaphysicians. And increasingly seems to me that death is not the end of life. It's the center of life. Kafka apparently said the meaning of life is that it stops. And it's not like exactly that we have a life and then we have to let go. It's sad. It's the end. We die. Mortality and finitude are right here. They're woven into the fabric of now, of how we experience the present moment. Finitude is woven into our emotional circuits, you know, and we are, could say we're here because evolution has made death the centerpiece of life. And finitude is in the architecture of our brains. It's woven into our thinking and our cognitive systems. It's woven into life itself. And there is this kind of overt truth that all that arises passes. But also this more pervasive pressure forged by finitude. And so on the first front, the kind of overt front, you know, I feel like I've been, in a way, tending to my own death for a long, long time. That felt like it was like in me, you know? And when I was young, I would have these moments that kind of penetrated through my defenses or something. And it was just the sense of time slipping away, the sense of like, this can't last. And the Buddhist tradition recognizes that this trajectory called life cannot go on forever. And so what to do? How to make sense of that? And many religions claim something like eternity, but generally found those notions threadbare, have the quality of coping, you know. And where after all would eternity leave us anyway? This is the critic writer Haglund. Far from making my life meaningful, eternity would make life meaningless, since my actions would have no purpose. What I do and what I love can matter to me only because I understand myself as mortal. The understanding of myself as mortal does not have to be explicit, theoretical, but it's implicit in all my practical commitments and priorities. The question of what I ought to do with my life, question that's at issue in everything I do, presupposes that I understand my time to be finite. For the question of how I should leave my life to be intelligible is a question, I have to believe that I'll die. If I believe my life would last forever, could not take my life to be at stake, and I would never be seized by the need to do anything with my time. So, to my mind, we're stuck with poignancy. Different Buddhist responses to this. Thich Nhat Hanh suggested no birth, no death, interbeing, inter-are, no clear way to say when something begins, ends. And I appreciate that, but the realization of maybe I'm missing something, but the realization of selflessness, of interbeing, the conservation of matter in the dharmic sense, still doesn't feel like a perfect consolation. Where there was a house, there's ashes. Where there was a friend, there's a body, corpse. Sometimes we talk about Nibbana as the deathless. Gates of the deathless are open. Deathless element. And this, it is said, is the only refuge from Mara, death, samsara. And we can talk about liberation, we can talk about Nibbana, I feel, without resorting to the metaphysics of deathlessness. And some of that to me feels like a kind of over-exuberance or a way of awarding the miracle and the miracle of the experience of freedom, awarding that subjectivity the highest title we can imagine, feels worth the highest title. But I don't know. I'm not sure what could testify to deathlessness while one's alive. And so we take stock. Okay, what ways does finitude, death, infuse life? And for years in the morning with a group, I would chant the five remembrances, you know, this early dark, and we were sitting together. And I'm of the nature to age, to grow sick, to die. All that's precious and dear to me is of the nature to change. Actions are my only possession. And that helps us clarify a lot, helps us clarify priorities. But even still, as I practice more, I don't know that we've fully accounted for death's centrality in human subjectivity in our practice. In a sense, you know, even when we're safe, healthy enough, death is very close. And each moment is shaped by anicca, you know, that word usually rendered as impermanence, but also as uncertainty, as quite remarkable, kind of staggering genius to place, you know, that the Buddha placed uncertainty at the center of everything. That weighs down on us moment by moment. And sometimes information is described as the reduction of uncertainty. Information is defined as that which reduces uncertainty. And we can see this in our life, the hunger to know, to narrativize, to stay oriented. And even truth is just, you know, it's valued insofar as it affords security. It's of instrumental value in ordinary human life. In Dharma life, I think it becomes more deeply animating, but generally it's like, no, truth is valued insofar as it affords security, affirms our ground. This is Marty Heselton. She writes, on the surface, cognitive biases appear to be puzzling when viewed through an evolutionary lens, because they depart from standards of logic and accuracy. They appear to be design flaws instead of examples of good engineering. To the evolutionary psychologist, however, the task is not whether the cognitive feature is accurate or logical, but how well it solves a particular problem, and how solving this problem contributed to fitness ancestrally. Viewed in this way, if a cognitive bias positively impacted fitness, it's not a design flaw, it's a design feature. Maybe self-view is one of those cognitive biases, sakya ditti, adaptive in our evolution, ancestrally, in our evolutionary past, adaptive now in some ways, but constrains our freedom, a kind of emanation of fear, the self as an emanation of fear. The self is the bulwark against death. And so I imagine, you know, with mortality at the center of things, I imagine our freedom entails a deeply reworked relationship to death, infinitude, to Mara's ultimate trump card. And return to a question I posed some months ago, something like, what would our life look like? What would our love look like if we were a little less afraid? Offer this for your consideration, and appreciate your attention. Look forward to being together again next week. Be back next week. Wishing you a good week of practice. Maybe at some point I'll start giving some homework. You find some homework assignment this week. Stay in the fold. Wish you well.